Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
Not too bad, no. I'm happy to be in here in the warmth of the studio. As I was coming in, I was looking to my left, coming over the East Link Bridge, and they were setting up the banners, Ken, and they were getting organised, wow. They were getting ready for the Liffey Swim. Liffey would you swim. Get in?
I would not. No way.
Oh, no, I can't.
I wish them well.
I do too, but it looked freezing there this morning.
Yeah.
And no, it's great. We're going to be talking to Brian Nolan, as I said there, one of the organisers, in just a few moments about that as they get ready on that 101st swim.
But fair play to them.
Yeah, you've got to give them fair play to them.
That wasn't yourself, Alan Colley and Declan Drake in the queue for coppers last night, was it, by any chance?
You're not supposed to tell anybody, Ken. You shouldn't be giving away the secrets. It was a bit bedlam.
I thought I saw you at the top of the queue among the thousands.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. You'd have some job if you were in that queue. It was unbelievable.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, that was always going to be the case. I knew when I woke up this morning, I was saying, right, we look at the videos now, there'll be some crack this morning. All the videos that are going to be coming out all day today, but I'm sure it
definitely,
will be.
Definitely, Carly was there with his short trousers, you know, up around his ankles, absolutely. You know, looking very trendy.
And the fancy shoes, yeah.
And his long Crombie coat.
Absolutely. But I'm sure it went well last night, I've no doubt. There was a lot of excited-looking people looking forward to going in.
It's great to see they're opening up again.
People still worried about it, but you know, we have to move on. Anyway, look, forget coppers. What about Old Trafford? You were there, of course, rubbing it in during the week to meet you. Actually got to experience that. I'm sure for the first half we were wishing you weren't there, but
what a match. And it's what Champions League is all about, isn't it? You know, Wednesdays at Old Trafford in the Champions League, it's just fantastic. You know, when you hear that music, you know, when they're coming out through the tunnel, it just gets the old juices going, the old goosebumps, you know, on the back of the neck. And it's just fantastic. I mean, it was terrible first half. They were all over the place. And, you know, certain sections were actually building them going off because they didn't know what they were doing. They were passing and they weren't pressing. They weren't, you know, they created a few chances. Could have scored a couple of goals. Rashford particularly, Fred as well at the end of the half. But Atalanta played, you know, didn't have to play very well, but kept the ball. I thought they passed really well, kept the ball well, and of course went 2-0 up. But then once Rashford scored that first goal at the beginning of the second half, well, then it just lifted the roof. And then the momentum just completely changed. I mean, we see it so many times in sport how, you know, one instant can completely turn a game on its head, and that's exactly what happened. And Ronaldo with the header at the end, well, the place went absolutely wild. And being included, the atmosphere was like one of the best I've ever experienced at Old Trafford. It was quite incredible.
Oh, it was incredible watching it. I mean, it was a fantastic game to watch, no question about it. Rashford, I mean, they were just so off the boil in the first half. They couldn't put a shot together. They couldn't string anything.
Yeah.
And you know, you're kind of going, where is this going? Like, they just look lost. They look absolutely lost.
They did, I think they were...
I think the lads that dragged them back into it. You know what I mean? There was some players that really stood up and just said, "You know what? We're not putting up with this." And it lifted everybody else.
I think they were devoid of confidence. You know, and confidence is a great thing in sport, as you well know, Reggie. You know, and you know, off the back of like a couple of really bad results, the Leicester game, of course, the Villa game as well, and losing the points with Everton. You know, it was the confidence wasn't there, and you could see it. They were nervous in the first half. And I'll tell you what, Bruno Fernandes in the first half was absolutely terrible. He couldn't string a pass together. He couldn't, you know, connect up with the players. And then all of a sudden, he made that one wonderful pass to Rashford.
It was an amazing
pass. Set him up for the goal. Yeah. And then his confidence changed, and the whole confidence through the team, and they got up for it. Cavani came on then, and Pogba made a big difference when he came on. And the whole thing lifted in the crowd, like really got behind them, you know, from certain sections doing them. They were cheering them and never stopped singing. And Ronaldo, of course, well, it's just written in the stars for him, you know.
It is.
I thought he played well, though, Ronaldo. He ran, You know, he ran the challenge completely different the way he was against Leicester, and really sort of he really stood up to be counted, and certainly did that. And the goal is just incredible, absolutely incredible.
It's right. I mean, the finish on it. Tell me, you know, you were there amongst it all. I know you were rubbing shoulders with Sir Alex, but you know, with Ole, like. I remember an example in rugby. I'll give you an example in rugby. Michael Checa was coaching Leinster. They played against Northampton. It was called Bloodgate. It was going to go, you know, if they didn't win that game, it looked like it was curtains for Michael Checa. They did come back. They 6-5, I think it was, in the end. It got the result, and Checa went on to win the European Cup that year, and it saved his career. This feels a little bit like that. It felt to me like... if Ole had lost that game, he was out. He was gone. And it's not saying his career is saved yet, but it's that tight.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people are saying, like, it's papering over the cracks. But, you know, like, one win can change a lot. But, you know, of course, they have Liverpool now and tomorrow, you know, tomorrow afternoon. And that's going to be a different kettle of fish completely, the way they're playing, you know. And it's, and if Ole had lost that match against Atalanta, particularly a 2-0 down, you know, the boos were, as I said, were ringing out. And if they had lost that match, they were almost certain not to qualify for the Champions League. And, of course, they got the visit of Liverpool. And if Liverpool beat them, they've got Man City, and then they've got Tottenham coming up in this month as well. So it's a really tough run of fixtures. I think, I wouldn't have been surprised if he had got the sack, you know. Mm. But I think they will stick with him now until... And, of course, this sort of win will hopefully raise... you know, their confidence and give them at least, you know, that little bit of lift going into tomorrow's match. But it's going to be very, very tough against Liverpool. There's no doubt. Liverpool are flying. The front three are brilliant. Salah is on fire. You know, he's scoring some wonderful goals, and is possibly the best striker in Europe. Himself and Lewandowski are probably the two best strikers in Europe at the moment. And it's going to be very, very tough for them tomorrow. So, but this has given everybody a bit of a lift. There's no doubt, you know.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned Liverpool there. Another wonderful game that I watched during the week. It was one of those games where you're just kind of going, what is going on here? Like, you know, the total opposite of the United game, but getting there in the end, and Salah just on fire at the moment.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's scoring some wonderful goals, playing beautifully, and they're playing very, very fluently, Liverpool. And, it was a great game. I mean, Griezmann came back with those, you know, the goals. And then I thought he was a little bit unfortunate. I know his boot was high. He wasn't sort of looking at the player. He was looking at the ball, but his boot was high. And it sort of, obviously, you know, went in. He ducked his face for me, you know, and he got sent off. You know, remind me of Manny getting sent off against Real Madrid a few years ago in the Champions League for somewhere. But it was very, very harsh. And it changed, you know, it stopped the sort of the momentum of Atletico, but... and then they went on to get a penalty in the end and score. So, great match. Liverpool are on a run, as I said. And I've got a ticket for tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, the atmosphere will be electric. And I've got a play tomorrow myself, actually, at a snooker match at 10 o'clock in the morning. So, it might be a bit of a race to get to Old Trafford. But, I can't wait for tomorrow. The atmosphere, Liverpool games are, you know, second to none. Second to none.
Yeah, no, that is obviously the one that everybody looks forward to, the big game this weekend. I'm sure it'll be cracking one, all right. Just go out early, I suppose. I better not back you tomorrow then. That'd probably be the best bit of advice.
I'm on at 10 o'clock in the morning. I'll tell you what, I'll have my skates on. And anyway, it's gotta be quick, whatever happens.
It's the German Open, of course, that you're playing in, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
it's the German Masters qualifying, tomorrow. Yeah, German Masters qualifying tomorrow, and then European Masters during the week, you know. And so all the boys are there. You've got to win two matches to go to Berlin, which is until the in February, you know. But Mark Allen was there yesterday, of course, a fantastic winner. I'm sure you watched the end of it last weekend up in Belfast against Higgins, you know, coming from 8-6 down to win 9-8. On home turf, which is not easy to do, but he played superbly well, and it was great sort of advert for the game as well. You know, to go right to the end, great atmosphere up in the waterfront hall. What a wonderful place it is up there. I remember playing Alex Higgins there in a sort of testimonial match for him to raise some money for him when I won the World Championship back in '97, and he came out with the fedora and he'd been to Louis Copeland's, you know, and he got a wonderful new suit. And the place was absolutely packed. 2,500 people there. It was absolutely fantastic. Great spot.
Yeah, no question about it. It really looked like, and it meant a lot to him as well, the reaction.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, I mean, winning at home, it's very, very difficult. You know, you sort of put extra pressure on yourself. You know, I always found it difficult, even though I loved it, playing in the Irish Masters and golf, the crowd, the atmosphere was electric. But always, you know, you put extra pressure on yourself to try and win, and he certainly did that. It was delightful for him. It was a great, great win, you know.
Absolutely, no question about it. Okay, here at home, changing back to domestic. I know you love the football here and rugby.
Oh, yeah.
But like Pat's getting through and Bowes, we're looking at a Pat's Bowes FAI Cup semi-final, 28th of November. I'll be going anyway. Now it's in the Aviva, so there should be plenty of tickets available. I'll go along with the kids because I'd say I want them to savour that atmosphere and feel that atmosphere. They're mad into it at the moment. So that's going to be like the old rivalry. That's going to be a cracking match.
Yeah, absolutely. All Dublin final. You know, it's fantastic. You know, delighted for both teams. It's going to be brilliant. Yeah, and it is great that it is in the Aviva, you know, as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's wonderful. There'll be a wonderful atmosphere, a great day out for both sets of fans. And, you know, fitting that it's in, you know, the home of Irish football, for the international football at the Aviva. It's a wonderful stadium, great pitch. And, yeah, it's going to be fantastic. And congratulations to Rovers as well. Well, they're on the course. All those years ago, when I used to sell programs up in Glenmalure, up in Milltown, for Shamrock Rovers, when I was only about, you know, 12 or 13, myself and Mick McLean selling the programs. They bring back some great memories, you know.
Did any of the money actually make it into the box, into the coffers of the Rovers? You and Mick McLean selling programs. I thought you took 50 programs. No, I only took 10.
I know. You went missing, all right. You know what those fans were like up there.
They're terrible fans. It's all their fault. They take it out of your pocket. I know well how it works. Don't worry.
We used to have fivepences and tenpences in our socks going home.
Unbelievable. Okay, listen, enjoy the game. I'm jealous, very jealous.
It's going to be an absolutely
amazing atmosphere. I know you're gonna love that game. I don't know. Give me your thoughts on it. I mean, obviously you're going to go with United, but I think it's going to be
a scoring game. And I think I'm going to say 2-2.
Time to move on now. I did mention there when I was talking to Ken that the Liffey Swim is on today. Leinster's Open Liffey Swim. It's the 101 organisation of the event, sponsored by Jones Engineering. And I'm delighted now to be joined by Head of Operations, Brian Nolan. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good morning.
Good to chat to you. I was coming in this morning early over the East Link Bridge. I saw you all setting up on the left-hand side, putting up banners.
That's us, yes.
Bright and early. Now, a little bit nippy there this morning, small bit on the chilly side, but I suppose literally water off a duck's back to your swimmers. They don't even know.
Absolutely. Now, listen, it's going to be a minor little consequence we have to play. We're all delighted that it's gone ahead, absolutely. So, we're set up in the East Link. We've moved up, and halfway up, there's another crew on the Killarn boat. And as you talk, I'm over with Dublin Fire Brigade setting up the Finnish compound here, setting up the al fresco showers, as you say.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, listen, it's the 101st running of this event. I mean, give us a little bit of the history of it and things that have happened over the years going back.
Well, as I say, it's one of these things that started off very, very and by one of the guys who was working with Dublin City Council, and to test the waters, he said, "Right, why not run a race? It's going for the last 101 years, as they say, and." It's just getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah, and you've got 500 people taking part in the event today.
I think they just asked that question there, and there's 532 swimmers. Now, if one or two might shy away or get stuck in traffic or something like that, but it's over. We expected around 300, and we just couldn't believe the entries. I mean, everybody's mad keen to do it.
Yeah. And tell me this, it's slightly changed the route, I believe, this year. You're going in down the opposite us down here at the Point Depot.
Yeah, for a couple of reasons. In fairness, the water has got a little bit chillier. Mm. So we've shortened the route. and we, again, with the logistics, trying to, normally we'd get road closures and bridge closures, we just physically didn't have the time, and if we left it any longer, we'd be right into November and the water would have gotten a bit chillier. So it's a 1500 metre route from the East Link against the normal flow, but we are swimming on an incoming tide.
Okay, right. And obviously there's loads of opportunity for spectators. It's outdoors. They can line along the lovely walkway there and watch the event pretty much the whole way along.
It's fabulous, and I'm just looking at it. It's a fabulous crisp morning down here. It'll be great for spectators. We're expecting a few thousand in, but for those who don't want to come in, it's been live streamed. Jones Engineering have helped us tremendously, and they've provided live streaming for anybody who just wants to watch it on Facebook as well.
And tell me, is it like the marathon a bit, Brian, in that do you get international contingent? Do people come in to actually take part?
We on a normal year, we'd have, it's about 10% of the swimmers will be on a normal year. We have a guy, Stephen Lyons, who landed yesterday. He's from Texas. Mm-hmm. We've another guy, Damien Donfield, is after coming in from Bermuda. And another guy from Africa, Paul Wynn, is after coming in from Africa. So, we've three internationals, and probably another few more will claim, but they're the three I know off the top of my head.
Very good. Yeah, that's great to hear that there is that international aspect. And of course, as I see it a lot, I live out in Greystones, I see it a lot with all the dry rovers, and there's a huge uptake in open water swimming and sea swimming and cold water swimming and everything else. So I'd say there'll be a few people fancying their chances there today, giving it a go.
Oh, absolutely. We have a few first-timers, and we welcome them with open arms. We have advised them to listen. It's the first time we've allowed wetsuits into the lift, obviously because it's the later time of the year and the water temperatures have dropped. We have a couple of safety precautions for the first-timers. They're mainly in a group. They're going off at a handicap around 12 or 14 minutes, and it gives us an opportunity that we can keep them in a bunch. We'll have more kayakers with that bunch and so on, you know, and it's just a safety aspect. And look, there can be one winner in the ladies, one winner in the men's, so the rest of the swimming for a bit of fun and a few points afterwards.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, I'll give out the details again. The ladies' race is taking place first. That's at 12 noon, and then the men's race will follow that at about 1:15, you know, give or take a little bit with everything that's going on. And both the ladies and the men's races will start at the Three Arena and finish at the Matt Talbot Bridge. Have I got that right?
Matt Talbot Bridge, and they get out of the Customs House, and Customs House, OBW have organised that we can get changed in the Customs House ground. There's marquees set up there as we speak. And then the main part of the day is down to the Killarn boat for the bit of food and a few points.
Okay, it's time to turn our attention to golf now, and I'm delighted to be joined by a regular contributor, Deirdre Smith. Good morning, Deirdre, how are you?
Great, Reggie, how are you?
Oh, I'm very well, thanks. Very well indeed. Getting a bit of golf in, not as much as I would like, but getting a bit of golf in during the week still, even though the weather has started to change a bit. But it's been really great following things that have been going on, and in particular looking at Rory's performance and the win last week in the CJ Cup in Vegas. 20th career win, PGA Tour win. Just an amazing achievement. We tend to forget maybe sometimes when we're talking about Rory, where, you know, we kind of maybe are a bit disappointed at times when we're looking at him in Masters and different things. We're thinking he maybe should be doing a little bit better. But 20 PGA titles, it's an absolutely incredible career record.
Yeah, look, you hit the nail on the head there, Reggie. I think we don't appreciate Rory McIlroy enough in this country. I think we're far too hard on him, and we expect too much of him. And, you know, he's absolutely revered in every other country he goes to. And I think we need to give him a break. I mean, he's one of seven people to win 20 tournaments on the PGA before the age of 33. And he joins people like, you know, Palmer, Casper, Nicholas, Watson, Mickelson, Woods. I mean, you don't get a more exclusive club than that. So, you know, I think we really need to appreciate Rory McIlroy, and you know, this is what he's been waiting for, and I think maybe he's just turned a corner in his mentally about things. That's the impression I get. Maybe he was trying to be something else. You know, there's a lot of new young players have come out, Morikawa there and DeChambeau, and they're doing all these amazing things, and maybe McIlroy felt he had to do all those things. And he forgot that what he had always done will yield results. So,
What is it, do you think, Deirdre? I mean it's an unusual one. I'm a huge Rory fan. I'm just blown away by what he's achieved over the years and how he can continue to do it. And I always tend to give him a bit of slack, even through all of the, you know, I won't say controversy, but all the chat around the Olympics and who he'd represent and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I tended to back away from it and say, look, leave him alone. Let him make his own decision. Stop putting the pressure on. But why do we revere the likes of Lowry and Harrington and McGinley and all of our amazing golfers that we've had over the years. But with Rory, there seems to be almost a bit of a divide amongst people. I can't work it out, really.
No, I'm the same. I feel exactly the same about him as you. I think we should absolutely revere Rory McIlroy and what he has done for golf and what he has done for young people coming into the game in golf. It's just remarkable what he has done. And he's absolutely loved everywhere. I don't know. I don't understand it either, Reggie, mm-hmm. to be honest. And I'm in the same camp as you. I absolutely love what Rory McIlroy has done. I think that he has lifted Irish golf. I remember when Harrington won in Birkdale and Rory McIlroy was the amateur winner. You know, he won the amateur medal, the silver medal for being an amateur. And Harrington said, I'm glad I've won this because you know, this guy here is just going to win everything. And that's exactly what's happened. And we just expect too much of him, maybe. I don't understand it either, to be honest. And I just think we need to give him a break. And to think of him in that club that I just mentioned, I mean, it just speaks for itself.
Absolutely, and he's not exactly over the hill either. You know, there's still plenty to come. He's still a young man in golfing terms. So, there's plenty to come on that. Okay, well done to Rory on that 20th career PGA win. Quite an amazing achievement. The other person that we're very much focused on these days is Leona Maguire. How's everything going at the BMW in Korea?
It just seems as if she hasn't found the form she had before the Sandheim Cup since she came back. She's one under par. She's way off the pace. Like 1800 is leading it. It's been dominated again by the Koreans. There's six of them in the top 10. Just hasn't found the form that she showed before the Sandheim Cup. And you know, maybe there's just that bit more expectations on her, and maybe she's putting those expectations on herself. And that's a different type of pressure to just being a rookie and going out there and just, you know, having a go and having a, you know, seeing how she gets on. So she'll know better than anybody how to deal with that because she'd have dealt with that right throughout her career. It's in a different country. It's in Korea, you know, maybe the traveling and things like that. You just don't know. Mm. Hopefully when the tour returns to the States in November, she might get, you know, recreate that form. But look, she's had a great year. Again, we don't want to be too hard on her either. She's done a lot of good things this year. So, you know, let's give her a break. If she doesn't have the great finish to the year, then what about it? In some ways, I mean, she's had a marvellous rookie year. So, look, we hopefully we'll see a bit more of her back in the States and a bit more of her pre-Sandheim Cup form.
I've no doubt we will. Absolutely no doubt whatsoever. She's that good. Okay, and the European Tour is still going ahead. Can you give us a roundup of how the Irish players are going in that at the moment?
Yeah. Caldwell is doing quite well. He's 3-under. 10-under is leading it. So it's good to see Jonathan Caldwell, you know, kind of being consistent week in, week out. I know he has his tour card, and that takes the pressure off, of course. So he knows that he can kind of play with a kind of a sense of freedom. Apart from that, you have Cormac Turpin, Niall Carney, Paul Dunne and Gavin Moynihan, who really are struggling. They're all over par. I know Paul Dunne has been plagued by injury. You know, they're well outside the cut mark for their cards, even when they're race to Dubai. So they're under pressure now at this time of the year, and it's a lonely place to be, I can tell you. And hats off to them, because week in, week out, to be competing and kind of feeling that you're not going to get there can be a really tough place. But one highlight this week was John Murphy, who secured his Challenge Tour card. To kind of put it in context, John Murphy played around the Walker Cup in midway, so he only played half the season on the Challenge Tour, but he secured his card for next year, which is, it gives him week in, week out golf. He just got in the 69th place, and I think he's going to be a man for the future, because he'll have week in, week out golf there, competing against the second tier, and that'll help him to really progress onto the European Tour. So I have to say hats off to John Murphy. That's a marvellous achievement for him this last week.
It's time to turn our attention to the NFL now, and delighted to be joined, as always, by Stephen O'Brien. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. I want to ask you a question off the bat, Reg. You know, we saw my quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, right? He's slagging off the Chicago fan base. Was that a thing in pro sports? Did you find yourself slagging off the opposition from time to time?
No. I didn't. No, it wasn't. It kind of wouldn't be the done thing in rugby to be slagging off the opposition. The opposition could get stuck into, the opposition supporters could get stuck into you a fair bit, all right, but no. We weren't that inflated with our egos that we'd have, because it only leads to trouble. You go out and you play the next match and you have an absolute loser of a game, and you never hear the end of it. So no, there's none of that. We're all very well.
Well, of course, look, you're on the radio, you're very professional, Reggie. I didn't expect it, but look, Aaron Rodgers, do you know what's interesting? And as you say that kind of thing, I've you go out and you have a mare of a game. Aaron Rodgers went out against the Bears the weekend, and he's usually this guy, and he even says it himself, Reg, like, all quarterbacks are the face of the franchise, right? So they have PR agents, and their PR agents have PR agents, and they tell them what to say, like, do not say this, don't say that. And they spoon feed them the little sort of narratives from the media, but to kind of protect them from the bad stuff. So, like, these guys are in a pretty sterile environment. And Aaron Rodgers says that when he gets up on the podium, he gives these kind of robotic answers. But when they went up against the Bears, now this is a massive rivalry. They call it the oldest rivalry in the NFL. There's some anoraks out there who say it isn't, and they need to maybe go outside a bit more. So it's 100-year-old now that these teams have been playing each other. The narrative has always been like big city Chicago plays little Green Bay. And I mean, the games used to be so low scoring. There'd be more fights in these games, Reds, than touchdowns back in the day. Green Bay punching above their weight. Brett Favre comes along and then starts handing it back to the Bears. And now, right now, they're leading in that rivalry. But in last week's game, Rodgers puts on dominant display, legs it in for a touchdown, and gets smacked at the end of the play. So he goes to ground. When he gets up, he's jazzed because it's after being taken down.
Yeah.
And his team are around him, they're shouting. But he looks up into the crowd, right, Reg, right? And he says he blacks out because he sees this woman giving him the double bird. Yeah. Now, they went back and got video and footage of it. There's a flock of birds, Reg, up there meeting Aaron Rodgers. So he blacks out and declares, I've owned you. I own you all my life. I own you, and running around, which is refreshing, right? Because he goes viral, of course. You never expect it to go viral. And the thing about it is, he didn't take it back after the game. Usually you say to a pro athlete, oh, what was that all about? And they go, oh, I don't know. And they try row back. And he says, nah, look, it is what it is. So in a PC world, we are not supposed to say anything, and you're the franchise quarterback. He just digs out the Bears. Now, he has a point, because he's played the Bears 26 times, Reg, and he's won 21 out of 26, with the overall record now being 102-95. So it's brilliant that he came out and said it, because if you think about it, look at the rivalry between, you know, Celtic and Rangers and United and City and Leinster and Munster. And this guy comes out and says exactly how he feels, which is brilliant. And it's gone viral. But the thing is he's sort of, it's always those rivalries, they're always spurred by the fans. The team are not even from the locality most times, so they don't really care. Whereas for Aaron Rodgers to say that the Packers fans hate the Bears fans, and he's a real ambassador now for the sport. So for a player who was out of favor, remember, in the offseason, whether he'd come back or what, he's back now, and he's really impressed the fans with that display.
It sort of feels a little bit like it's overinflated, though. I mean, you see footballers all the time going up and banging the crest and, you know, pulling the crest out, and reactionary. I mean, I don't think saying I own you is that insightful, but I mean, there'll be others that'll think, oh, you can't do that. I mean, it's in the passion of the moment. I think
that's the thing.
Blown out of proportion a bit, doesn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, the thing is, it just speaks to the fan base. The thing is, it's so sterile now, the NFL. It's so annoying. Like, I used to get, players that are playing Bow Reg on the podcast, but they never tell me anything.
Yeah.
And not that I'd be trying to get dirt on them, because I don't, that's not the type of journalism we're after.
But you want some sort of,
instead of this, like, oh, well, I do my best every day and I come out, and if we score more points, we win the game. And they're thinking, oh my God, I'm going to die of boredom.
Yeah.
So it's good. But like what he said, as you say, this stuff in NFL goes on all the time, and it's not all the time that you're in the end zone and you get mic'd up, but he says he's always going back and forth with fans. So this is the first one to get caught on camera and on mic, and it's of course in the day of social media it just goes viral. Like the storm in a teacup stuff.
Absolutely.
But it's still a nice bit of fanciful stuff of a Sunday, you know.
Absolutely, that's true. Well, okay, there's been a bit more trouble for the Washington football team as well, as if they didn't have enough on the field for a change, though. Longtime kicker Dustin Hopkins has been dropped for a player who's never played the game, a fella called Chris Blewett. Did he
This is, it's, you couldn't write this stuff. If you brought out a book or a movie and you said, I'm going to call the main character Chris Blewett, they'd be like, no, come up with something believable.
Yeah.
So look, Dustin Hopkins, he had a shocker last year. He was a bit shaky this year, but he's been around the team since 2015. Ron Rivera is trying to get his team sort of in motion. The problem with the Washington football team, they're not the Redskins anymore, was the fact that, like, you know, they had this stellar defense and they were sort of gone into this year thinking, oh my God, they've built up the defense so much they're going to win. Like, we were on the radio talking a couple of years ago, a long time now, where Peyton Manning went and won his last Super Bowl and rode off into the distance. He was benched that season for Brock Osweiler, who was also terrible, and then he was benched again for Peyton Manning. But they won that Super Bowl based on defense. So people are looking at this Washington team going, oh, you know, this is going to be great now this year. Their starting quarterback gets injured. They put a new guy out there. And now they're looking for blood because the Packers are playing the Washington football team this week. And every time we do this sort of preview episode and I listen, much to my demise, to all of the opposing podcasts to see what they're saying. And the only thing that they're saying, Reg, is that, oh yeah, they sacked this Dustin Hopkins guy. They got rid of him to send a message to the locker room. And they're not content with that. Now what they're looking for is, yeah, well, they needed to get rid of Landon Collins and they needed to get rid of this guy. So the fans are calling for the blood and head of different players because they're like, oh, they need to send a message somehow. So you're kind of in Haypenny's place if the headline for your team is A, the kicker gets released, B, the guy they bring in after has a ridiculously silly name, but also has never kicked in the NFL before. He's kicked in college. The last time he kicked in a game, Reg, was in Pittsburgh. And everyone's saying, oh, the Pittsburgh Steelers, cool. But it's like, no, Pittsburgh in college, he hasn't kicked in the NFL. Right. The balls are different. The rules are different. And now the fans are calling for more people to go just to send a message to get the team up in the morning and get them out to play a proper game. I mean, you're in Haypenny's place if that's the case, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, onto a loser big time. Okay, Case Keenum, the ultimate journeyman quarterback. He's back starting games in the NFL for the Browns.
Yeah.
Because Baker Mayfield is injured.
Yeah, this is a bit of a weird situation as well, Reg. I mean, how many times have we talked about Case Keenum? To give you an example of this guy, and like we always say this, don't we? Like the journeyman player, and then he's been with two teams, so it's not really... His career so far has been wild. He was undrafted, although he was a grand player in college, signed by the Texans, waived and picked up by the Rams, then signed back to the Texans, then signed back to the Rams, and then he signed with the Vikings, where he's most famous, in 2017, and Sam Bradford got injured, and he took them to the NFC Championship game, which is sort of unheard of if you're a Vikings fan. They've never won silverware. Then he got signed with a two-year deal to the Broncos, but got traded to Washington, and then he gets traded to the Browns, where he's at now. But he's in there with Stefanski, who is his head coach in with the Vikings, so he sort of trusts him to come in, and he was supposed to be kind of a mentor to Baker Mayfield. The Browns were doing absolutely class this season. They were putting up massive points, which is why I picked him in Miami, which is then why they lost the game, because I picked him in Miami. And then Baker Mayfield got injured, so he has an injury to his shoulder, but he's after coming out on Thursday night, Reg, and he's after winning the game. Now, it was a low-scoring game, so we can't lose a run of ourselves, but here's a guy who went literally bounced back and forth between teams. He's getting his chance again, and now they're asking the question, do they ask Baker Mayfield to play through his injury? Because, as you know, in a contact sport, if you have an injury, you're just going to keep aggravating that injury when you go out and play every time. So they're actually asking Baker Mayfield to play on that shoulder injury and then get surgery at the end of the season. But you never know, and as you know, that could just exacerbate the injury. He could get like inexplicably worse, and then you risk his career, in fact. So the question now is, do they leave Case Keenum out there to do the business? Because they're still in with a chance to win the division, go to the playoffs, and that's what's at stake here. So whether they leave Case Keenum, the journeyman, out there, or whether they try force Baker Mayfield to play, they just don't know. But it's in good hands, but it looks good after 1 week anyway.
It's pretty serious stuff, all right. They're messing with somebody's career, so it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. Yeah. I've had a text in here from Ian. He wants to know, he likes listening to your accumulator every week, but he wants me to ask you as well, for an outright, who do you think is going to go all the way and actually win the Super Bowl? I know it's very early days, but a nice outright early doors for Ian.
Yeah, it's hard. Look, I'm going to be biased and say the Packers, and they're somehow going under the radar, but they seem to, they've been hit with so much injuries, Reg. They went to the dance almost last year, and they rebuilt the team to go back this year. You know, there's some teams that are, I wouldn't call pretenders right now, but the Arizona Cardinals are doing really well. But they're a team, you have to be suspicious of a team who has jumped up massively or fell massively based on last year's performance when the personnel hasn't really changed. Because sometimes that's strength of schedule, and when they come up against a good team, they get trounced. But if you look at the Packers, for instance, like keep an eye on them, because there's so much going into this team in the sense that they brought an awful lot of their players back. Aaron Rodgers is seemingly here for only one more year, which is this year. So he's all in to win it. And then also they signed a guy Whitney Merciless, who was given other money to go elsewhere, including the Kansas City Chiefs, who everyone sort of deems as favourites, to go off to the Steelers, and Tennessee, who had a good game as well. So he chose to go to the Packers and take less money. Hmm. And there's a reason for that, because the whole of the NFL recognised the fact that the Packers are on a one-way train going right into the playoffs and then hopefully to win the dance at the end of the day, because Reds have been decimated with injuries, but they're still winning.
Yeah.
And they're slowly getting those injured players back. So I'm biased, but I would say the Packers
they're
are definitely
13 to 1, though. I mean, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 6-1, Buffalo Bills 7-1, Kansas City Chiefs 15-2. They're well down the list in terms of the bookies' predictions.
Yeah, and you look at Kansas City, I mean, they're in real trouble. They're looking at sort of Patrick Mahomes and wondering, like they were 30-0 down last week against the Washington football team, who we just talked about, were trying to sack some of their players just to try to give the other players a message, you know. Tampa Bay are absolutely solid. But this week, I was going to put them in my ACA, but they're down two all-pro players. So, you know, the thing as well is they brought all their players back, but if they also get injured, well, then they're in with a chance of getting dumped out. And on top of that, they will have to come and face the Packers eventually before they can get to the Super Bowl. Yeah. And the Packers were close to winning that last year, and I think they could, you know, get over that hump this year if they come up against them, because we've nearly beaten Tom Brady so many times.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just injuries or something gets in the way. So yeah, the Packers, and with those odds, they're good odds. So I throw a tenner down and
there you go,
thank you later, hopefully.
There you go. 13-1, go with the Packers, see what happens. Okay, give us your ACA for this week, Stephen.
Right, here we go. Green Bay Packers, it's a quite a big margin, to be honest, even though Washington are struggling. There's a 7.5 spread on that one, but I'm still going with the Packers on that. The Carolina Panthers is -3 against the New York Giants, so I'm liking that, even though the Panthers can be up and down. Now, a massive spread, the LA Rams against the Detroit Lions, it's -16.5, but the Detroit Lions have been an absolute travesty. I don't usually go for spreads that big because sometimes it's too big, but look, if you go for those, you put a tenner down, it's a 3-goer, and it's a 6-1, so you get £70 back.
Very good. Okay. I see we mentioned it briefly last week, but Joe Biden has finally opened the door, the border on the 8th of November. That means that the UK Packers tour to Lambeau Field is a go ahead on the 12th of November. Is that something that you're still inviting people to go along with you, or is it all booked up?
All sold out, would you believe? It's our first year that, because usually we sold 45 places on it, so we actually turned people away this year after COVID. People were mad to get over. But yeah, we squeaked in, going to a college game on the Saturday, the Packers game on the Sunday, and then come out. It's a wild time, absolutely wild time. So if anyone's interested, when they hear me on the radio, to come over to a game, Lambeau Field, even if you're not a Packers fan, is incredible. So we'll be doing it now every year, as long as some other pandemic doesn't come along, Reg.
How many are you bringing over? How many are going?
45 including me. So usually it's around 27 to 30, so there's 45 this time, so we have to get a big massive bus, and we're driving up to Madison and seeing it's the first time we've done the tour in the way that we're doing it, because usually we fly in and drive up to Green Bay, then back down for a college game if we can get it, and then back up to Green Bay. But we're spending the night in Madison. And if you've ever seen one of those sort of college movies where people are shotgunning beers on rooftops and, you know, throwing footballs into crowds and people falling into ditches, that's exactly the way Wisconsin Badgers game is in Madison. It's the wildest atmosphere I've ever seen. So we'll be doing that again Saturday in a couple of weeks.
Very good. How old are you again? Oh, I'm only joking. All right.
Listen, I won't answer that one.
You have a good weekend, Stephen. Thanks a lot for all of that. And we'll catch up again next week. Okay, it's time to turn our attention to rugby now. Delighted to be joined by my good friend Shane Byrne. Good morning, Shane. How are you?
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Very well indeed. Looking forward to a good weekend of the URC. Let me ask you straight off the bat, what are you making of this URC so far?
I think it's good. It's a little bit concerning, obviously. You don't want to see... The South Africans have had a few wins now, but you'd like to see their performances up a little bit, but let them settle in. I suppose, I think, I'm still a big supporter of it. I think it's going to be a good league.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, I was talking to a South African just yesterday about it. He was saying how difficult it is for those South African teams. Razzie brought 47 players, imagine, when he was going on tour down below. And, you know, that's just decimating teams. And you've got teams like the Bulls are straight after winning Currie Cups, and they're kind of straight into this URC thing. So it's a little bit difficult for the South Africans. We probably need to cut them a little bit more slack than we are.
Yeah, no, the second half of the league will probably tell a tale for them. I'd say completely different squads. But look, it probably will take the full season for them to settle in. But I think they should be given the time. And the one thing you want is that they stay interested. That's the main thing. You know what I mean? You certainly don't want them, every time they come up here, they're having a miserable time. You need for all the teams, the Bulls and the Sharks, everyone to start getting wins at some point, so that it keeps them interested and keeps them going. Because you know yourself, once that creeps into a squad, it's a hard thing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Okay, good result last night for Leinster. Again, we're talking about, you know, the Irish teams. You're looking at Leinster, Ulster, Munster in the top three. Connacht down a little bit further, obviously, after that defeat last week. But, you know, again, it's a fantastic performance away from home by Leinster, and some of the younger guns stepping in to deliver that performance as well.
Yeah, strange game, I have to say, in the sense that we all know that going over to Glasgow is a hard place to go. And even if you have a substantial lead at half time, Glasgow have an amazing ability normally to claw back and get back into the game. But they didn't do it. And they were playing a really direct style of rugby, which is just not like them. And, you know, Leinster came out wanting to pass the ball around and keep finding the space, you know, right throughout the park. And they just took control of the game and never really let go. You know, just before halftime, yellow cards and stuff like that, there was a try. You know, but that was it, really. And it was unusual. I thought when I saw it halftime, I thought, okay, we're set for a cracker in the second half. But Leinster never released control of that game, and it was really impressive. You know, it helps when we had the bench that we did coming on. You know, Van der Vleer, Reese Ruddock, Devon Toner, all these guys, Dan Sheehan, both hookers getting on the score sheet again. You know, all of these guys had a big, big impact coming off, and it didn't release the pressure on Glasgow whatsoever. So really, really impressive performance, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And yeah, Dan Sheehan getting in for a score as well after his Ireland call-up. It's interesting looking at some of the names that were on that Irish call-up list from Andy Powell.
Yeah.
And then maybe one or two omissions that were a little bit surprising as well.
Yep.
Was there anything in it that kind of jumped out at you?
Jack Carty.
I think you could probably debate
that some of the most exciting rugby this year has been played by Connacht.
Yeah.
You know, they've had some amazing performance. You know, the Bulls a couple of weeks ago, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago, that game against Munster, they were superb.
They were.
And there were a few mad decisions went against them in that game. Mm. Like, they should have won that game. And, you know, Jack Carty has been steering that ship brilliantly, and so I wonder where it is.
Match, if I'm not mistaken, as well.
He did. He did.
It's very odd, you know, that he's not involved. What do you think's going on there?
I don't know. I think he has his. I think he has the three guys he's kind of penned it on now at the moment. You know, Harry Burns, the future. Joey Carberry. Now, this is a bit harsh, obviously. Harry Burns, the future. Joey Carberry probably is still living on a bit of the reputation that he had previously. He's playing well, but he's not playing as well as we've seen him play before. Now, Johnny Sexton is kind of, it's almost like a resurgent Johnny Sexton.
Mm.
You know, he's overseeing the transition, maybe. But Johnny's playing very, very well at the moment. And it's, I don't know. I you would have debated whether Harry Byrne has done anything this season to deserve a call up to the squad. Now, look, we all know he's an absolutely fantastic player and a brilliant squad, or a brilliant talent. But simply put, this season, just taking a snapshot of right now, Jack Carty has to be ahead. Jack Carty has to be sitting form wise close to number two in the country at the moment, form wise. But look, you know, that's why Farrell picks the teams he has. They have to fit into his squad. And obviously something Jack does doesn't fit in there at the moment.
Yeah, and no, there's definitely the face doesn't fit going on because, yeah, as you said, form just doesn't dictate what we're seeing. And it must be very frustrating for him. But I suppose the only thing he could say is if he can try and almost put it out of his head and say, look, I'm not getting into the Irish squad. I'm just going to focus on Connacht. All I can do is focus on Connacht and try to do as well as I can there. You know,
well, it can, as I well know, it can become an obsession, the whole Ireland thing. So you've got to just concentrate on making yourself as good as you can be. And then if the opportunity arises, which hopefully it will come for him, if the opportunity arises, he'll be able to take it because, you know, he's doing everything he can, you would think, on the pitch week in, week out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you said there, I had the exact same experience myself. I had an 18-month hiatus with Warren Gatland was in charge.
Yeah,
I couldn't get in, and I was told by Matt Williams, just focus on Leinster, the rest will come, and it did, and I got 7 years out of it then after that. So it is all about performing for your province, and eventually you can't get ignored. So hopefully Jack Carthy can do that. And of course, no better place than tonight, which is a huge, huge game for them, taking on Ulster 5:15 this evening, and what they're talking, in what they're calling, I heard it during the week, saying is a thank you to the fans, or a showcase for the fans.
Yeah, well, look, yeah, you'd be kind of looking at it now going, with the new rules, you know, should they have left it in the sports ground, you know, because obviously they didn't know. So the idea was that they bring it up to Aviva, all the fans who'd want to go to it can go to it, as opposed to the restrictions. Now, obviously, you know, with the restrictions being lifted, they could have been in a better state. But, yeah, I suppose the big news coming from Connacht is Bundiaki, the injury to him, and basically that's a big blow, because what you wanted here was Connacht absolutely firing on all cylinders, as they were last week and the week before against the Bulls. And you just, yeah, there's you know, that Ulster team have been playing some serious rugby. You know, you have Timoney, Hume, McCluskey, Ballacombe, all these guys have been absolutely playing out of their skin, top of the league at the moment, and playing very, very good controlled rugby. Doak as well. There's a guy who should have been brought in.
Yeah.
Like, even at one of the, you know, the way they have a couple of guys that are in just to experience the squad, even for that, like, he's only a young guy. Like, bring him in. You know, because his form was absolutely outrageous. But anyway, yeah, back to the game. You would be a little bit concerned with Connacht. They are getting a few injuries here and there, but it's just, yeah, they would really need to play superbly. They'd need to hit the ground running as much as they did in their, you know, particularly the first half against Munster. But to me, the favour probably is leading towards Ulster in the sports grounds. Maybe you would have gone for Connacht, but I think Ulster might just get this one.
Yeah, they're playing good rugby, there's no doubt about it. I agree with you on that one. It's going to be tough one for Connacht. Now, on the other hand, Munster are away to the Ospreys. The Ospreys are, you know, the same as they always are. They're a complete enigma. They're a team with a great squad. They're a team that have won three games so far, but still can underperform dramatically. And let's be honest about it, Munster didn't deserve to win that game last week. They'll say otherwise, but I mean, it was a poor refereeing decision. It really was. Connacht
was
very, very hard done by. On all things being equal, Connacht deserved their victory last week. And Munster didn't look as good as I've seen them anyway. I think they've a lot more in them. But away from home against the Ospreys, this is a really tough one to call.
Yeah, very hard. Very hard. And, you know, and I suppose the main headline coming from there is young Jack Crowley getting a call up to start at 10. Carberry and so on the bench. And, you know, is that the outing you want to be given a vital game? But look, I think you put the finger on it. Ospreys aren't the team they used to be. You know, they for some reason, I don't know what has happened, but in the last couple of seasons, they've really, really struggled. And it doesn't matter whether it's home or away. So this game will still be completely in Munster's hands to control if they can do it. And that's what they need to do, is go over, do the usual, get the control up front. And, you know, they are playing good rugby, Munster. You know, as you started off, you know, our chat with, you know, the Irish provinces are playing well. There's good rugby being played. There's a lot of talented players out there. And that's what they need to do. They need to keep going with that. There's still huge experience. Tyke Burnback, Klein, you know, Casey is still on great, great form. You know, Andrew Conway, there's experience all throughout the team. And to me, this is still a game that Munster needs to take control of, and that it is in their hands. I just, I don't think the two teams playing full steam ahead, I think Munster would win this game.
Yeah, okay, we'll see what happens. Just as soon as we're on the topic of Munster and we mentioned the Irish selections as well, what about Simon Szebo getting back in? There was a few people saying to me that it was kind of a bit tokenish because he had come back to Ireland and they felt he had to be involved in the squad, that there are some a lot more players playing better than him at the moment. But I don't know. What's your thoughts on it?
Well, two things. Firstly, I have no problem with him being in the squad. None whatsoever. We all know he's an amazing talent and, you know, he's a very, very, very good player. But has he done enough since he's come back? No. Simply put, he hasn't. You know what I mean? It is a bit odd. I would have expected it to be maybe running into the Six Nations that he's played enough to get back in. He just hasn't. It just seems like he just hasn't seen, and we haven't seen enough of him to do that. Now, he's done excellent. There's no issues with it. There's absolutely
no problem with him being there. He hasn't lit the place up yet. He hasn't kind of given us what that is.
No, to come out from like a player who hasn't been in the squad in years, we all know the reason why, and like to get straight back in, it's almost like more of a statement rather than a form selection. But look,
statement? I wonder. Let's put our cynical hats on. Is it the IRFU kind of going, well, there you go, lads. If you come back to Ireland, you play in Ireland, you don't go overseas, you get into the Irish squad, there's the proof.
I don't know what you're talking about. They'd never do anything like that.
Well, there's no doubt he is a hugely talented player. We're not saying that. That's not a question. But
good to see Balakum getting in there on the wing as well, I have to say. Really, really exciting player to watch.
Yeah, there is a lot of kind of upcoming youth and all that kind of stuff that we would like to think is building towards the future. There's no question about that. So we'll hope for the best. It'll be an interesting November and no doubt about that. It's time to turn our attention to the GAA now, and I'm delighted to be joined here in studio with Declan Drake with the roundup of all the championship fair. Declan.
Thank you, Reg. Very good morning to you indeed. Yes, quite a busy weekend last weekend in the Dublin Senior Hurling Championship sponsored by Go Ahead, and the Senior Football Championship quarterfinals taking place over the course of this weekend. So plenty to get through in the next few minutes. Before we start, we're going to start with Camogie actually this week, and we're going to congratulate the ladies of St Jude's, who last week captured the Dublin County Championship with a 114-15 points victory over St Vincent. So well done to all the girls there from St Jude's. So then to the Hurling Championship. It was double headers on the double at Parnell Park last weekend. Na Fianna were beat St Jude's by 26-23 after extra time to book their place in the last four, and of course maintain their aspiration of a potential championship treble this year. The footballers are in the championship quarterfinals and their ladies are in their semi-final as well. So good win there for Na Fianna over St Jude's, requiring extra time, as I say, to do it. The other game then, Lucan Sarsfields beat Craig Curran by 120-116, so a 4-point win there for Sars. And the semi-final draw, which was made after Sunday's fair, means that Na Fianna will take on Lucan Sars next Sunday afternoon at Parnell Park. One to savour there, I'm sure. Then on to Sunday, and Kilmacud Crokes maintained their impressive form in this year's championship with a 125-19 point victory over Oliver Plunkett's own Rua. Crokes, like Fianna, a team with double aspirations this year. The big one was the clash of defending champions Coola and Ballyboden St Enda's on a beautifully warm afternoon, it must be said, at Parnell Park last Sunday afternoon. And the game certainly didn't disappoint. We spoke to Sean Lane about it last week in the build-up. We promised you a cracker. That's certainly what we got. Extra time was required ultimately to separate the teams, and it was the men from Dalkey, the defending champions, who advanced to the last four on a 127-28 points scoreline. The late scores coming there from David Tracy and Dubs dual star Con O'Callaghan to send John Toomey's team into the last eight. Just seem to be getting better as it goes on. Well, after the game, I took the opportunity to speak to Coola netminder Sean Brennan, who is, of course, a Dublin panellist as well.
County champions, Sean, at the start of the afternoon, and you're still county champions, maybe a little bit longer than you anticipated it was going to be out there this afternoon, but look, the important thing is you're through the last four.
That's it, yeah, exactly. Like, we've had a few dogfights now the last few days, like, so it's... It's fair play to the lads for standing up and making a count when it needs to be done. it's definitely not easy out there, and it wasn't easy against Bridgeside. I'd probably consider it slightly lucky in both games, like, so. But look, a win's a win, doesn't matter how you win, we're in the semi-final.
You're the goalkeeper down the other end of the pitch, but you're looking straight down at those last two pucks coming in from David Tracy and Conor Callan and sailing over the crossbar. Very nice feeling to see it.
Absolutely, yeah. No better men to do it, like, so they won't leave you down. But yeah, no, look, it's, look, there's only so much you can do, and it's up to the lads then to stick it over when it matters, like, so fair play to them for doing it.
Look, we know the success you've had over the last number of years, which has been fantastic, but people actually were questioning this cooler team, particularly after the Bridgets game. Oh my God, what an answer you gave them today.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, no team is going to be at the pinnacle forever, like, so the fall is inevitable, but we don't want it to happen under our watch, like, so we'll give it 100% every time we go out, and we'll keep fighting for it.
What is it about this group, the dynamic of it and the way it works?
I don't know, there's just a lot of resilience in it, I suppose. Like, everybody pulls together, like, it's probably a cliche, like, but everyone digs in 100% for it. We're all backing each other up, we're all giving it 110%, and look, at the end of the day, you saw the results of that there. Now we pulled another one out of the bag,
and you've extended your championship season by another 2 weeks at least.
Yeah, look, the longer we're on the road, like, it could be bad now. Otherwise, if we're sitting on the couch, now you'd be tempted now to enjoy yourself.
And they won't have much time to enjoy themselves, that's for sure, as they prepare for the mouth-watering prospect of that semi-final clash with Kilmacud Crokes at Parnell Park next Sunday afternoon. They met, of course, earlier in the Championship, Crokes winning that one, and we'll have a full preview with Sean Lane on the programme next Saturday ahead of next Sunday's game. As I said earlier on, the Fianna taking on Lucan Sars in the other semi-final. Plenty to look forward to there for the small ball faithful in the capital. We're now going to turn our attention to football, and like last weekend, we have a double header at Parnell Park today and tomorrow at the quarterfinal stage of the Senior Football Championship. But there were two very important games played last night in the capital, and one of them will send shockwaves through the game, I'm sure. The fact that Vincent's, the mighty Vincent's, the team with the record number of county championship titles, will not be participating in Division 1 championship next year. They were beaten last night by Whitehall Columbkill, 112 to 13 points in the relegation playoff. And Clontarf, well, they're staying up as well, 224 to 212 victors over Oliver Plunkett's own Rua. Now, delighted to be joined on the line by my good friend, journalist from The Herald, Ronan McLaughlin, to dissect last night's events and indeed to look ahead to the quarterfinal action as well. Very good morning to you, Ronan. Have we got Ronan? No.
Yeah, well, it seems to be just Jane will get him back on the line. Okay. There now. Well, while we're waiting to get Ronan back on, we'll come back to that piece, Declan. What about the appointment of Henry Shefflin as the Galway manager? That was a big news story.
It certainly was, Reg, because the vast expectation was that it was going to be Davy Fitzgerald that was going to be appointed to the job as boss of the tribesmen. But no, they've gone with Henry Shefflin. So his first foray into senior inter-county management. Wish him well with that. He's cut his teeth well with Ballyhale Shamrocks. And it'll be interesting, particularly if the Round Robin Championship in Leinster comes back next year, because it'll be the master in Brian Cody of Kilkenny versus the pupil in Henry Shefflin in Galway. So that'll be an interesting one to look forward
There'll
to next
year.
There'll
be a lot expected from the tribesmen. Now there's no doubt about it with Henry in charge.
Yeah, it's a big appointment, a big statement. But look, Galway have regressed over the last couple of years. There's no doubt about that. They're very much in the pack now, chasing Limerick down. So the people who followed hurling in Galway will certainly be hoping that Henry is the man that can lift them back to getting close to the top table of it again.
Yeah, okay. Well,
we have Ronan back.
Ronan, yeah.
Fair play. Okay, Ronan, sorry about that, but you're on the line. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Declan. Good morning, Reggie. How are you?
Very good, very good. Ronan, let's start with last night, as I say, and the news that St Vincent's were beaten by Whitehall Columbkills, 112 to 13 points in their relegation playoff, Clontarf winning against Oliver Plunkett's own Rua. But that news of that Vincent's defeat will send shockwaves around the game in the capital and beyond, I would have thought.
I suppose it would, but I mean, the signs were there. I mean, they've lost so many of the team that were, I suppose, instrumental to making them the dominant, what did they win, 4 county titles in 5 years there a few years back. The lads like No Connolly, No Carthy, No Jerry Brennan, all these lads were serious players who drove that team forward. And there was always going to be a period of rebuilding there. They had a tough group in the championship this year, could have had an easier group. I mean, got the win against Ballantyre St John's, but you know, Castleknock would have been a tricky game. Kilmacud would have been a tricky game. Probably wouldn't have been expected to win that. So that wasn't really a surprise that they finished where they were. I suppose the surprise was maybe that they lost to Whitehall last night, because Whitehall's form hadn't been what it should be. But they're a decent team and we're always going to put it up to them. So I suppose a period of transition won't do them any harm. It might take the pressure off the younger lads coming through, and they do have some very good footballers coming through the club at minor level at the moment. So I think it's just a case of them taking their medicine and maybe just being able to regroup away from senior one at the minute. And listen, there's no doubt they'll come back stronger.
Yeah, no doubt that they will. So on to this weekend's Championship quarter-final action. Doubleheader this afternoon, Ronan. First up at 3 o'clock, the clash of near neighbours St Jude's and Thomas Davis for a place in the semi-final. And these two know each other very, very well. You're expecting a close game between them.
I am, and to be honest with you, I'm expecting a close game in all four matches. I suppose if we're lucky enough to have anything like the quality and excitement we had with the hurling last weekend, we'll be doing well. But this is a game that's very, very hard to call. I think Jude's are a team that are consistently there at the quarterfinal and semi-final stage, and I suppose it was always been the scoring that has let them down in terms of just getting the scores when they need to, because in terms of organisation and sort of commitment, they're always there at the top of the tree. But they seem to have addressed that this year, and they've brought in David Mannix, a lad from Austin Stacks. He used to be at the club years ago and has come back. They also have Pat Spillane around midfield who chips in with a few scores, and Alan Connolly, a lad that's come through the nursery there at St Jude's, has really brought a bit of firepower to the forward line, and that's what they've always been looking for. I mean, I think there was always just a bit too much emphasis on Kev Mack and Niall Coakley for scorers. So they seem to have better balance about them. They're top scorers in the group stages of all the 16 teams in the Senior One Championship, which is not something you would normally associate with Jude's, but they're playing a Thomas Davis team that mirror them in terms of their organisation, in terms of their tough tackling, in terms of their physicality, in terms of their size. They're a very big team. They're a very well-organised team. They've Kieran Farrelly there as well. So it's just made up for it. It's, I mean, I don't want to sit on the fence, but it's very, very hard to call this game. I mean, you wouldn't rule out extra time. But if you had to put a gun to the head, I would just perhaps go with Jude's by a couple of points.
Well, either way, a Southside team into the semi-finals there. Now, the other game this evening at Parnell Park is at 5 o'clock. Defending champions Ballymun Kickhams taking on Lucan Sarsfields. Kickhams, in some respects, a little bit like Coolah, the hurling champions, Ronan. They haven't hit all cylinders, if you like, this year so far. Now, they have reasons for that with the injury list that they've had. But look, they're still in the championship and they know how to take it on from here.
Well, that's it. I mean, an awful lot of people have made that comparison between themselves and Coolah, but I'd probably say that the injuries that have affected Ballymun this year are far greater maybe than that what Coolah have suffered. They're struggling to find their fluency at the minute, but they do have that, I suppose, that reflex action that they can dig it out and win the games when they need it. They still top their group. Obviously, they don't look anywhere close to how impressive they were at this stage last year, but in fairness, last year they gave one of the best sort of campaigns in Dublin Senior Championships that we've seen in years. They were so dominant. They were so ahead of all the other teams. Perhaps we're basically expecting them to do the same this year, which would be unfair on them. They still have that ability to dig it out, which you'd have to give them credit for. Lucan will come there now. Lucan are underdogs, but I mean, everybody is giving them a chance and nobody's ruling out a shock. But I just think the Ballymun have enough about them to be able to put that challenge away.
Okay, we're going to group the next two together, which is tomorrow. Ballybode and St. Enda's had to wait a little bit of time to see who their opponents would be in the quarterfinals because Ballantyre St. John's required, or Castleknock, pardon me, required a game against Ballantyre St. John's to see who would play them. So Ballybode and St. Enda's or Castleknock, who's going to make the last four from that one tomorrow, do you think, Ronan?
It's a hard one to call because Castleknock will definitely benefit from the game that they had on Wednesday night. It should give them a bit of momentum. They beat Vincentswell the previous day. Bowden are kind of sitting there. We all know their abilities. They have a tendency sometimes to disappoint in key matches and just not deliver like they did in the quarterfinal last year. Very lucky to get over the line against Raheny. Bowden have the ability. There's no doubt about it. But I think that might be closer than a lot of people anticipate.
And then the blockbuster tomorrow afternoon to round it all off, Kilmacud Crokes versus Nafin. That's going to be an epic battle.
Oh, God, I would just wish you wouldn't ask me about that one because I scratching my head trying to, you know, you can make arguments for one team over there. I saw Kilmacud against Ballantyre the last day and they looked very, very, very good. They're moving very well. Not as reliant on Paul Mannion as they have been in previous years. Hugh Kenny looks to be moving very, very well. Tom Fox moving very well up front. And they just have that that an aura of a team that's going the right direction. But Nafina, you know, before this year's championship, I would have probably made Nafina the outsiders. They lost to Ballyboden in the group stage, which possibly kind of has maybe reduced my confidence in them. But I still think they've so many good footballers up front. When you look at the lads of Caffrey and Doran and Lacey and McHugh and these boys, they're just serious operators. And I just think this could be in a similar vein to what we saw last week with Coolan Ballyboden in the hurling. A game that really will reflect well on the quality that we have in the Dublin Championship.
Yes, and I'm going to put my head in the block now and say that ET could be required. I know journalists hate to hear that when it's mentioned, but it's a real possibility in that one. Ron, look forward to meeting you at the Nell, no doubt, over the course of the weekend. Thank you very much indeed for your time this morning.
My pleasure, Declan. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Reg, the Dublin Ladies Senior Football Club Championship semi-finals are on this weekend. Two blockbusting games in prospect, both throwing in at 3 o'clock tomorrow. On the Fairhouse Road, Ballyboden St. Enda's take on the defending champions Foxrock Cabinteely, looking for a seventh consecutive county title. Meanwhile, across the river on the Moby Road, Nafina, beaten semi-finalist last year, entertain Coola, who just over 12 months ago were crowned intermediate champion. So a great success story there. So plenty of great GAA action to look forward to, Reg, over the course of the weekend.
Okay, time to turn our attention to football now. They'd like to be joined on the line, as always, by the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. I'm good. Yourself?
Very well, thanks. Very well. Geez, a great week of football. I really enjoyed it. It was out of this world now, the amount of football. None more so than the women during the week. A tad unlucky, own goal and all of that. The performance was rock solid. And I know, like, you know, Sweden are such a high-class team. We'll probably say well done, but it's actually a bit disappointing they didn't get the draw out of it.
Yeah, I obviously covered the game, Reggie, and it was good in terms of the fact that you're playing against top quality opposition and they defended so well. But I was just a little bit disappointed with the fact that there was no real plan B as such when we did fall a goal behind. And I always felt the approach from Vera was obviously to be defence orientated for the first period of the game, stay in the game for as long as you can. And all that was going fine up to the point where you get to an hour, maybe 70, 75 minutes, and you're still in the game at 1-0. And I felt at that stage she could have thrown another body up front to help maybe Heather Payne, or when she made the substitutions to support Leanne Kiernan. But she just went like for like and remained with just one up front, with the four in midfield and the five at the back. And I felt there was a chance missed at that stage, because you might as well lose 2 or 3-0 at that stage, Reggie, while you're chasing the game. And they never really went for it. And the only plan B really was to throw Louise Quinn up front to centre half. And I just felt that was a bit of a backward step, especially when you're trying to move the game on and you're trying to be progressive. And I know, don't get me wrong, Sweden are top quality and they are top quality. But if we're going to develop the game, the days of moral victories and stuff like that, they should be in the past, really. And I just felt they should have went for a little bit more towards the end.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Well, the good news for them is that Denise O'Sullivan will travel with them to Finland. The arm injuries doesn't seem to be as bad as they thought. So that game on Tuesday, of course, televised and covered by yourselves again on RTE, be in Helsinki. A tough one. How do you rate the chances?
Yeah, it is a tough one, because they've won their first couple of games as well. And you're in a position now, they might have been unlucky in the sense that the scheduling for the games has them playing obviously Sweden first and Finland, because the game was postponed last month. The game they were due to play, I think it was against Georgia. So now they've obviously the two games to kick off the campaign are against the two best teams. And we're vying really with Finland to try and get that playoff spot. And it's going to be a tough game over in Helsinki. As I say, they're a very good side as well. But I nearly think they need to go and attack the game a little bit more. Whether Vera will change the approach, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see on Tuesday. But I certainly think they need a result, because if you don't get a result on Tuesday against Finland, you're obviously 6-9 points behind the likes of Finland, Sweden, and it's a real uphill task then to get anything out of the group.
Yeah, well, it'll be one that we'll all be watching very, very carefully on Tuesday. So looking forward to that one. Okay, another great game. Games going on last night with Bowes and Pats both getting victories to get to the FAI Cup final on the 28th of November. Declan did catch up with Pats manager Alan Matthews after the game. Let's have a listen to that.
Very satisfying tonight. Really focused, and our attitude is really positive about coming in to this evening's game. We've been playing well the last couple of weeks. Results maybe haven't gone our way, but we have been playing well. And I thought tonight we combined playing well with scoring some really good goals. And the key tonight was, you know, performance was secondary. It was about result. and the result was to get to the final. And that motivation and that kind of never say die spirit from the players from the get-go was very evident. And as I said, we were able to chip in with some wonderful goals, great performance, and we're there now in the final, and it's something that we can all look forward to.
As you say, superb team performance all over the park, but young Dara Burns, particularly down that right hand side, was outstanding, and he capped it off then with a fine goal himself.
He's an exciting player, a great talent, terrific attitude, comes into training every day, applies himself, works very, very hard. He's one of the players who always stays back and tries to improve certain aspects of his game. But his composure in that finish tonight, and he was a threat, he was a thorn in Dundalk side all evening, but his composure, the game is in the melting pot really, the last couple of minutes, Dundalk are throwing everything at us, and you know, we have to defend well, but he goes and kills the game with an execution that you'd expect to see from a player maybe 10 years older than him. He's a very exciting talent, and if he continues to apply himself and work as hard as he is now, he will have a good future in the game.
Yeah, very, very solid result, Alan. 3-1 against Dundalk, and sets things up for an absolute cracker. One I have in the diary already for bringing the kids to Bowes versus Pats on the 28th.
Oh, it'll be brilliant, Reggie. I can't wait. I was in Dalymount last night, and the scenes all over Dublin, really, obviously in Dalymount, and I've seen a lot of footage from Inchicore and the photographs, the fans, absolutely brilliant scenes. And Stephen O'Donnell's done a brilliant job at St. Pat's. I was glad Declan brought up Dara Burns, because by all accounts on the night he was outstanding. I saw a couple of the clips in the goals as well, and his pass for the second goal and his finish for the third one. And he's one of the best young players in the country, and it's sky's the limit for the kid. And it's going to be a great day on the Sunday the 28th of November. I can't wait. As I say, I was in Dalymount. Brilliant result for Bowes as well. A result they probably needed, Reggie, in the sense that they've got a lot of plaudits, Bowes, and I've given them a lot of plaudits as well, but they let themselves down then maybe on their consistency levels week to week in the league, getting a couple of sloppy results, but they certainly needed to back up, I suppose, the praise that Keith Long was getting by getting to a final and hopefully winning one as well maybe for him. And there was brilliant scenes in Dalymount last night, and Georgie Kelly, who's been a revelation for them all year, got the winning goal late on as well. They made heavy weather of it. It wasn't a great game. Waterford will feel disappointed as well maybe with their performance and their approach, but I think on the 28th you'll have Bowes. The first time I think it's happened as well. Declan might correct me on that, but as far as I know, it's the first time Dublin, Bowes and Pats have met in a cup final, so it promises to be an unbelievable occasion, and I can't wait for it, Reggie.
Yeah, you're spot on there, Alan. It is the first time that they've met in the final. And if I'm not wrong, it's the first all-Dublin final since Shelburne beat Bohemians to win the double back in the year 2000. But a tremendous game in Richmond Park last night. Tremendous atmosphere. Really, really great to see it back. And, you know, we have to hand it to Pats, you know, second in the league at the moment, into the cup final. And it's been some season. But one quick question for you. Bohemians have played three times already in the Aviva Stadium this season in the Europa Conference League. How much of an advantage do you think that might be for them if you're looking for any kind of an edge on it?
I think it's a big one, Declan. I was at all those games in the Aviva in the summer, and Bowes took to that stadium and that environment like a fish to water, or duck to water. Was absolutely amazing. It really was, in terms of their performance levels, and they showed no fear whatsoever about going into those games. So I think that will stand to them, the fact that they've been there in the summer and feel comfortable with that environment. But again, it'll probably just come down to on the day. The two teams, they're closely matched, to be fair. I know Pats are second in the table and Bowes are fifth, but there's not a lot between those teams. It's very much a 50-50 game. You're right in what you say about Stephen O'Donnell. He's done a brilliant job. Stephen's experience might stand to him as well, in the fact that he's been at the Aviva so many times with Dundalk. But I think on the day, as we all know with cup football, it will come down to who performs better. And I can't wait for it, because both teams like to play in that attacking, progressive way. They both like to attack. There's very attacking-minded players on both sets of teams. And I think it promises to be a great occasion, Declan.
There's no doubt about it. It'll be one we're all looking forward to. Very quickly, Alan, I have to ask you, or just say to you, it looks like Ole just managed to save his job during the week with that comeback. Ronaldo coming to the rescue at the very end. A cracking game of football to watch. No doubt the football was unbelievable all week. But it's hanging on by fingernail stuff for Ole, isn't it?
It is, and that can't be good, Reggie. You know, as you say there, hanging on by fingernails, because it's week to week almost with him, and they lose a game and it's a crisis and he's on the verge of getting the sack, and then the win and it saves his job, and that's just not sustainable in the long term. And even the performance the other night, the first half was an absolute shambles again, and that's not the first time that's happened. The second half, it's almost like a free shot and a free hit, because you throw caution to the wind. And the likelihood is they'll always create chances and maybe score goals because of the attacking quality that they have. But what would worry me is that first half performance. And it was the same last Saturday against Leicester. Totally outplayed. No game plan. Zero identity about the team. He doesn't know his best midfield too. He's chopping and changing. That's a major problem area. Then how does he deal with, I suppose, the superstars in the team? And he left Pogba out the other night. And it's going to be interesting to see how to get on against Liverpool tomorrow. But I wouldn't fancy them at all against Liverpool, because we all see the performances Liverpool are putting in and the level that Salah's hitting as well. And Liverpool are top quality, Reggie. They have a brilliant manager, a brilliant team. And it's only prolonging the inevitable with Solskjaer.
Yeah, and it's a joy to watch what Liverpool, the type of football that they're playing as well. Even though Ken will hate me for saying that. Who have you got on the podcast this week, Alan?
I'm not sure, Reggie, to be honest with you.
Good preparation.
I've been that busy the last couple of weeks. Yeah, I've been that busy with stuff, and the tickets are nearly sold for the live show, which is great. So we will be making another announcement on a guest that we've lined up for the show as well, a good name, a big name. So all is looking good for that on the 17th as well in November.
You can't beat the benefit of a good producer though, Alan, can you, and Mr. Morris? He'll keep you on side.
There you go. He's top notch, Paul Morris, as you well know.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.